What's up, NDL? We're back with the Outliers, looking to talk about all the G5 conferences in this episode. See how things are going at the midway point of the season. Of course, I have my podcast partner, Mr. Vic. How are you doing, sir?
I am good. How are you doing? It's a NDL Saturday. You got that fresh cut grass feeling of an NDL Saturday.
Not feeling too bad. Got a game later today, so we'll see how that goes. It's a good weekend for games too. Like all of my teams are playing in college around the same time, and then obviously tomorrow the start of the NFL. So start of the Bucks road to the Super Bowl.
My nose already blew out their little FCS opponent, so I'm good on that. And I'm not speaking on my NFL team. Not gonna do that. Not gonna do that.
Fair enough, fair enough. And we have a guest on this episode. We have the coach of the Michigan State Spartans, Coach TG. How are you doing, sir?
What's going up, Sam? Going on, Sammy? How you doing?
Not bad, not bad. Good to have you on. Thanks for taking some extra time out of your day.
Yeah, man. Happy to be on. Looking forward to it. Nice to chat with you guys.
Likewise, yeah, we were having a nice little friendly chat before the pod. So we're going to try to focus on talking about the conferences in this episode. Last episode, we were talking about, just kind of big G5 storylines that have happened in the first half of the season. Now we're going to look at what's going on with the conference races. First up, we're going to check on Conference USA. So as we talked about in the last episode, Vic, your team, No Way Jose, your guy, Missouri State, killing it out there, picks up a big win over Middle Tennessee, which is not just big because those were two of the better G5 teams so far to this point in the season, but that's a conference win too. So I'd have to say probably right now he's the favorite to be one of the reps in Conference USA.
Definitely, he is the front runner in the CUSA right now. He beat the best competition, like user-wise. I know he still may have a game with one of the best teams overall-wise in the game later on in the season. But he did pass a big test. He passed his first test, which was the Power Four opponent. And then he passed another test going against Middle Tennessee on the road. So he is the class of the CUSA.
That'll be interesting to see. Like I would suspect, even with a trip up, I would still suspect that he's going to be one of the two teams. The question is going to be who's team number two? Middle Tennessee still isn't completely out of it. They do have one loss, obviously, but Jacksonville State currently is undefeated in conference play. They do meet, and Middle Tennessee will be the home team in that game. Who do you think ends up being that other team in Conference USA based on what you've seen so far?
It could be. I feel like it's going to be a rematch with Middle Tennessee State. I've seen the Jacksonville State guy play. He's good. The team overall helps, on that lower level. The team overall does help, and he may get past Middle Tennessee, but I don't see it that way. I see it as Middle Tennessee and Missouri State getting a rematch in the conference championship. And I feel like that may be the CFP representative in that game, kind of like we did in season 32 with South Florida and Florida Atlantic.
Gotcha, gotcha. DG, any input you want to add? Maybe not.
Wait, sorry, I was muted.
No, you're good. You're good.
Yeah, the Jacksonville State guy, he looks like I said, he looks like a solid player. I have not personally played him, but I have played Jose in a couple scrims. The second person coming out of there, Yeah, I mean, I would probably still lean towards Middle Tennessee as a in a rematch. I just think he's probably a better player, honestly.
I'm going to add one team in here, and it's not with any confidence, but it's one of the things that can cause problems. We saw it last year in the MAC. Now, I'm definitely not trying to call anyone out, so please, no one take this way. But Florida International, we've gone through and had a couple of teams replaced for, you know, not being able to commit the time, not playing games, whatever the case may be. And Florida International does not have any games played. So I'm going to put the caveat, if they get replaced, and it just seems to be a thing, when a coach gets replaced, it tends to be replaced by someone good. So maybe getting a completely new coach at Florida International, you might get a stud there, and that throws a wrench into things. But other than that, I would agree with you guys. I think Missouri State's going to, or Middle Tennessee will try to get that rematch from Missouri State, and we'll have to see how game number two goes between those guys. Oh, before we get to another conference, I'm going to skip. And we're going to talk about the Indies real quick, because I really wanted to talk about these two teams. Because I feel like it's one of those weird things where UConn gets no love because they don't have a home. And though Washington State has a home, it's like they're, you know, renting out that room out in the backyard. So they not like they're part of the family, but they're really not part of the family, kind of. I want to give those two teams some love and talk them up, because they're not in one of the group of five conferences, and they're both having good seasons. So I'll start with UConn. Mr. Dave, 5-0 on the season, 20th in the league in forcing turnovers, 14th in rushing. So doing what you really want to do, controlling the flow of the game, being able to generate turnovers for field position. They do have a monster game coming up, and it could be one of those resume games. You have number 7, NC State, on the road. Homie's been playing really good. Obviously, I'm in the ACC, so I got to see up close what he's been doing. Do you guys give UConn any chance of pulling the upset on the road?
No. No. No, I do not. I like NC State with Homie, and I like him in real life. I like how he uses that team, NC State. I think he's going to keep it close. I think Dave is going to keep it close with UConn, because it's rare that he gets blown out by anybody. So I feel like he's going to keep it close, but it may be like a 10 to 13 point victory for home.
Okay, CG.
Yeah, I'm kind of feeling the same on that. It doesn't look like UConn has really been tested too heavily so far. He had a 7-point win against Wyoming, but other than that, like the schedule has not been anywhere near what he's going to see against NC State, and on the road's always tough. So I think that's going to be, like Vic said, like probably about a 10-point victory at least for NC State.
Yeah, NC State has a pretty solid HFA. Like, it's not, you know, Miami or, you know, any of the SEC schools, but it is a pretty solid one. It'd be a tough place to play. I'm really curious to see how UConn's ground game looks in that one. Homie's been playing great defensively so far this season. So I don't know what UConn's going to be able to do on the ground. And I think that's probably going to be the biggest tell of the game. If you're able to control the clock, I don't know how much of a chance I want to give UConn. Like, if I was betting money, as we were talking a little gambling before, if I was betting money, I'd probably put my money on NC State. But I feel fully confident in saying that I think UConn can cover the spread for sure. I think they're going to put up a good showing. I just think if just with it being on the road, it's going to be a tough ask for him to be able to get a win. But man, if he does, that definitely makes UConn look a lot more interesting in the big picture for sure. But kudos to Dave, 5-0. Great first season on this game cycle. I know he struggled last season, so it's nice to see him have a bounce back. And I'll definitely be watching to see how he finishes off in the second half of the year. The other team to talk about, Washington State. This is a really interesting team, especially talking the playoff. Now we're going to talk Missouri State, big picture, of course. But the Cougars they've looked really good. D-line combining for 10 sacks, so it's not just one guy, everyone chipping in. Only loss was in the Apple Cup to Washington, which was by just 1 point, and Washington is the superior team. Steamroller's a good coach. So to only lose by one, and I believe it was a two-point conversion, that's a tough loss to swallow, I know, for him, because he's like, that's his team. It hurts to lose to Washington, but still, a really good showing. And his quarterback is balling out. Sebi has 17 touchdown passes, but only one interception. One interception. With how pick happy we can all be in the NDL, to only have one thrown pick is pretty crazy. But he's got some big games later on in the season. He's playing his nephew at Wake Forest, so that'll definitely be a test for his defense. No, he's been talking about that some in the live chat. And also, he gets to take on Central Michigan later on in the season. I believe it's block 6. So I'm really looking forward to that game. Two really good G5 coaches doing battle there. So I guess this is a two-part question. One, what do you think of Washington State? And two, how do you think their season finishes out?
I think their season finishes out pretty good. I think they may take another loss. But like I said in the last pod, they have exceeded my expectations so far. Like you said, Zevi is cooking 17-1 on a touchdown interception ratio. He is in that Heisman conversation. He wasn't on the power rankings this week, but I'm pretty sure with some games played, he will come right back into that list, into those rankings. Like you said, the defense has been balling out, a collective effort. I feel like the game against Central Michigan is going to be tough, but I feel like the game against Wake Forest is going to be tougher because he has such a demanding style. Now, I know they play each other. That's the family ties game, you know. A bunch of family ties in that game, so they do know each other well. But both of those games are going to be hard. I want to see if they do take a loss, if they fall in the polls, because they're hovering around that 15 to 20 mark right now with just the one loss by 1 point to Washington. So I want to see if they do have another close loss, if they even have a loss at all, where they will be at in those rankings and in the playoff committee's rankings once the CFP comes out.
That'll be really interesting to see. CG?
Oh, yeah, kind of feel the same way as Vic on the schedule. I think he'll beat his nephew in Wake, and I would pick Central Michigan to beat him. I know firsthand how tough Vic is, or how tough Chip is. And it doesn't matter what his team is rated, he figures out a way to get it done. So I think he's going to lose to Chip. And then I don't know much about the new Oregon State guy, but they have a pretty solid team. So that might be a tough game as well. But even if he finishes with like two losses, you know, he could be in conversation for CFP possibly. I don't know.
Yeah, Vic brought up a really good point that I hadn't thought about. I think when people are going to think of the G5, if I, you know, have you close your eyes and pick a G5 team for a playoff spot right now, I feel like most people would say Missouri State. Thing is, Washington State is higher in the polls, and unless he slips up, he should stay higher than him in the polls. Now, the one thing that may hurt him is not having a conference championship game. So you don't have that extra game to, you know, present to the committee. But if he were to finish 11-1, it'd be interesting with the changes in the CFP, and because of him already being ahead of Missouri State, I don't know how you would be able to move Missouri State ahead of him, one. And if that's the case, how does, like, seeing how it plays out, if maybe we got two, assuming, of course, Missouri State and Washington State don't lose another game. I think it'd be an interesting conversation for the committee, and I'm very glad I don't have to be in part of those conversations. But I sure would like to be a fly on the wall to hear them, for sure. Well, that kind of covers the third conference, so to speak. Since we have some action today, I just talked to Vic about this before the stream, it's not posted. Let's jump to the Mountain West. Things are getting a little interesting there. So,
Oh, yeah.
We, you know, when we prep for this, like, we're looking at the conference as a whole. Some really good teams. Nevada's playing well. Boise's playing well. Did well out of conference. Air Force and Hawaii. All of those teams have at least 4 wins, all on their way towards qualifying for a bowl. But one team out of those 4 does not have a conference loss. Now it would be Nevada. So Nevada's already beat SDSU. They have Boise coming up in the next block, or in this current block that's opening up. Oh, boy. We had a nice little curveball thrown to us pre-show. Boise lost to UNLV. So now Boise has 2 conference losses. Nevada definitely in the driver's seat, being undefeated in conference play. But Boise, I believe me and you both had them in the conference championship game, Vic. That second conference loss, how are you feeling about Boise in the Mountain West championship game?
I'm not feeling good. I'm not feeling good about it. The fact that Boise, with the schedule he has and had, the fact that his 2 losses are Air Force and UNLV, no disrespect to none of those coaches. Those coaches play tough, especially Black Rain. He's very underrated because he doesn't really say much at all. But he's very underrated and very tough with that team. Coach Ant is very tough with Air Force. So that was a grind them out game. I don't know how the game with UNLV, because you told me pre-show what happened, the result of that. So I didn't see the game. But him having 2 conference losses is a death blow, because as we've seen in this conference, it's not the fact that you have 2 conference losses. It's just, who are those conference losses to? Because it seems like every year, this conference goes to a tiebreaker to decide who's in the conference championship game. And even some years, they go all the way down to the 5th or 6th tiebreaker to decide who's in the conference championship game. That's how rough those tiebreakers can be for certain teams. So with Nevada still being undefeated in conference, with Hawaii having 1 conference loss, and Air Force still looming, and UNLV now looming, and of course you always have San Diego State looming as well. That's a tough pill to swallow right now, being through the midway point of your season, and you have two losses, but not only 2 losses, 2 conference losses.
Yeah, it makes it tough, because tiebreakers in these jumbo conferences are a nightmare. You don't get to play everyone. So when you have a 2-3, or in some cases, as we've seen, 4-team tiebreaker, it becomes difficult, because the only thing you control is trying to win your games. And there's just so much that's out of your control. Did you get to play this guy? Did you not get to play him? It becomes a headache. The one thing that I know for sure, they absolutely have to beat Nevada. Like that, they can't lose anymore. And that might not be enough because other teams are still going to play each other, but they have to beat Nevada. They have to still give themselves a chance to be in the running. And it starts there. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that literally becomes a must win. Yeah, that literally becomes a must win right there is Nevada and Boise. That is a must win for your chances of being Mountain West champ. You have to win that game.
Yeah, they're going to, we'll have to see how things look there. For both of you, I posed a question. If we're going to say that Boise with that second loss doesn't make it, what matchup do you have based on what you've seen so far for the Mountain West Championship game?
I'll let CG go first. You can go first.
I'm looking over the schedule right now and the standings. I think Nevada's going to get in there. I think they're going to knock off Boise next week, and I don't see them losing another game, honestly. I remember this guy from last year with Old Dominion. He's a hell of a player. And the other team is honestly, it's going to be tough, man. I don't know exactly who. I would probably lean on Hawaii, but man, like you said, it's a tough conference. Black Rain's got a nice history; like he's solid, so he could sneak up there. It's tough. I don't really have a pick. Sorry.
Oh, understandable, because I'm having a hard time too.
It's okay. Yeah, it is a hard time. You can go ahead, Sam. I'll go last.
I'm going to say Nevada is going to get one of those spots. My caveat with him has been this season, looking at the team, I just feel like they're really slow. And that's usually a bad thing on this game. But he seems to have figured out what he's doing defensively. Because you look at his first couple of games, he gave up 35 and 52. His last three games, 15, 14, and 14. So as he's come down to the Mountain West in terms of playing teams that are a little bit closer to his team talent, those scores have gone down. One of those was against San Diego State, a team that he potentially would be competing for, you know, for one of the spots. And looking at his schedule, no, if he can get by Boise, the only other spot that could trip him up would be UNLV, and that's all the way at the end of the season. Who knows how things play out with the rest of the conference? You still might be able to have one conference loss and be sliding into the conference championship very smoothly. But I think that he will finish out strong in the Mountain West, so I give him the spot. UNLV is an interesting team. So you knock off Boise, and they have Hawaii and Nevada in the last block of the season, and also play Air Force. So he will have a huge impact on who makes that second spot. I think it's going to be Hawaii. I feel semi-confident, not like fully confident, but looking at his schedule, he's got UNLV down the stretch. San Diego State's at home. I know he's had his issues in the past playing Big Z, but I just think the lack of talent, or like the talent drop-off in certain positions for San Diego State, is to make this tip a little more in his favor based off of the matchups defensively. If I had to bet, I'd put it on Hawaii. Not putting the lifetime savings on it, but I definitely could drop a decent amount.
With me, I feel like it's going to be Nevada and my guy Che Pono, Hawaii, in the conference title game. Now, it could be Air Force, it could be UNLV, could be someone else, could be Boise, who knows? But I really feel like that matchup is going to be the matchup for the conference title game. Can Jeff Daddy keep up the pace that he's already on? I know he's going to have maybe a tough one or two matchups later on in the season. Can he rise to expectations and definitely go ahead and reach that ceiling of the conference championship game? For Nevada, I feel like it's smooth sailing once he gets past the Boise game. If he's able to win that Boise game, I feel like it's smooth sailing from there. Like you said, he's figured out the defense. And once you figure out the defense, you pretty much have a solid three phases of the game, unless you kick it from the right hash from the 15-yard line on in. Unless you're doing that, then you have a solid three phases of the game, and you just have to not let any outside forces or any glitches or slip-ups or anything like that affect the rest of the game for you at that point. But his real test is Boise. And if he get past that test, I know he's in the conference championship game. And then after that is who can rise up to the top? Who can rise up and take that second spot? Somebody has to take that second spot. Who's going to rise up and take it?
Yeah, it's really interesting because Hawaii does have a win against Air Force. And it's crazy to think that even when I'm thinking about who gets that, I'm so, like, tiebreakers can be such a big deal. I didn't even think about that because I don't know if that's even going to matter a head-to-head win, as crazy as that sounds. I'm curious with Jeff because I'm looking at him last game cycle. He's had Hawaii since we got back to the NDL. And he had a 5-1 season in season 30. He's already got 5 wins now. So he's on pace at 5-2 to be in a bowl game and to be in a bowl game with a winning record. You know, I expect him to finish strong. Question is, now with the expectations, you're in a position where you have, I don't think leverage is the right word to use, but it's yours to lose. If you just take care of business, it's your spot to have. Now with those expectations, will that affect his play? Does he play the same? I'm kind of curious to watch and see how that plays out. But Mountain West definitely is, man, I don't know. That I've just, I woke up to that DM and I was like, wait, what? Like, that was one of those that instantly woke me up. And to be fair, Black Rain has played Coach IROC really tough the last couple of outings.
Man, that man plays everybody tough with that team.
Yeah.
That you really have to have a sizable gap in overall to really say, hey, I blew out Black Rain and UNLV. If it's not that much of a sizable gap in overall, it's gonna be a tough out for you. He is a tough out for anybody.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Mountain West chat right now. Last season, he was up 21-0 on Boise, and Boise stormed back and got a goal line stop to win. And then this season, he was up 23-7, UNLV. Boise storms back, and this time, Black Rain gets the goal line stop. So close finish, no lead is safe. I see fear cough. None of you are safe.
None of you are safe. Like, it's real. Like, it's real in that conference. Like, who's really going to step up to the plate and snatch that second spot and compete for the conference championship?
100%.
Well, a conference that's sneakily underrated right now, the MAC. What are your thoughts on the MAC conference so far midway through the season? What are you guys' thoughts on the MAC conference so far this season. We had Akron that was undefeated until Chip knocked them off of the undefeated realm. We have Eastern Michigan, who knocked off Chip and who only has, I believe, one loss on the year. And then you have Chip himself, which has, I believe, two losses on the year, one non-conference and one conference. How do you feel like it's shaping up in that conference?
I am very intrigued by this one. So I was able to go back and watch. Like, let's be honest, we should be trying to watch Chip games anyway, because he's pretty entertaining on the mic. It's definitely
one of the best streams in the NDL, by the way.
Easily. It's interesting because you have Akron, who was undefeated, just got into the polls, and then loses. And it's right after Chip, so we lose at home to Chip, right after Chip lost a crushing game to Eastern Michigan. And I was watching that game, and it looked like Eastern Michigan looked good, but Chip just seemed to be a step ahead. And just the swing of a couple plays is the difference in that game. Otherwise, Central Michigan would be sitting at 3-0 in conference, looking really good with wins against both. The question is someone going to be able to knock off Eastern Michigan? And can Central Michigan run the table in order to get into that presumed other spot if Eastern Michigan is able to, you know, just smoothly finish out the rest of the season? I'm looking at their schedule. You have a new coach in return of the MAC. Perfect name for a MAC coach, by the way. He's taking over Bowling Green.
Perfect name. Perfect name.
And then you've got Ball State with Cracker. You've got Jordan, who's new and a Buck fan. So I already know that he's a great addition to the league. Again, thank you, Andy. More Tampa Bay Buck fans, we can get the better.
Whoa.
No, just speaking facts. We all can agree on that. Definitely no problem there. And then the last game of the season that he'll have is against Western Michigan. And I always have a question when I bring up Metro D, because I remember him at South Carolina, the season that he made the CFP. Watching his games, I liken him to the early version of the Bill Brady Patriots. You watch the game and you're just like, how did he win? Because it's not like the offense shines. It's not like the defense has anyone that really stood out. It's just every game he found a way to win. And I don't know if he's going to be able to replicate that. Like, watching him is always like a big conundrum for me, because I just don't. I watch Pat. I know Pat is an offensive guy. I watch Smitty. I know he's a defensive user guy. When I watch Metro D, I don't really know how to define how he plays. Just that when things are working, he wins. So I'm really curious to see how he looks going towards the end of the season, because that's a rivalry game. That'd be interesting for Eastern Michigan. I honestly don't think that Chip, I know he says that his team is lacking some, they've taken a step back, but Chip likes to talk about make winning plays. He does. I think he finishes running the table in the MAC. I think he gets a rematch against Eastern Michigan. That's my prediction. But it's going to be a fun conference to watch. MACtion is always very entertaining. There's no defense. There's lots of points.
Yeah, you kind of stole my thunder a little bit. I was going to say the exact same thing. I think Chip's going to run the table. And I think Eastern Michigan's going to go undefeated through the regular season in the MAC too. And I don't think because of that loss that Akron had to Chip, he's going to be out. So I think the winner of the MAC, I mean, if it's, that's the tricky part. Like if it's Eastern Michigan and they're 11-1 and they win the MAC and they're 12-1, are they going to the CFP? Are they going to be ranked enough or high enough?
That'll be the question. You're talking about Eastern Michigan or?
Yeah. I'm saying if they were able to meet up with Chip again and then win the MAC and then stay like 11-1 or 12-1, that might be real sneaky.
I feel like if they get in the CFP, a lot of stuff has to happen with the other conferences, and people would have to really start paying attention to him to even get him ranked, because he's not even ranked right now. And we're in block, what, 4 or 5 right now? So it's going to be, with half of the season done, it's going to be kind of hard depending on the other conference. It's just a wait and see with him. The domino effects of the other conferences are determined if he gets that CFP spot or not.
That's interesting, because had Central Michigan, you know, they had the loss. I'm sorry, CG. I don't want to bring up bad stuff, but
okay, it's okay, man. It's all me.
Block one, no, Central Michigan is ranked. He beats Michigan State, but then the Wake Forest game was a disaster. Hey, it just, there's no other way to describe it, because Chip was already ranked in the polls, and then 72 points. That hurts. That drops you, and that, like, if he had won that game, or if that game was even close, maybe Chip still stays ranked, and that win at the time for Eastern Michigan looks better. So I don't know if Chip will be able to get back up into the ranking. Because the way I'm looking at it from an Eastern Michigan perspective, you wanted him to be undefeated, because he was already ranked. And potentially, if you were to beat him twice, that would be 2 ranked wins. Versus Missouri State, who got to play Missouri, who was a ranked school. You had the eyes on him. And he got the win on the road. Like, there's just not from... He definitely would need some help, because just the overall schedule of Eastern Michigan, it's not going to hold up to some of the resumes that you're going to have with, say, maybe a Washington State if he runs the table, Missouri State, maybe a team in the AAC. Will get to them here in a minute. It's possible, you know, that their resume based on some of those top teams in that conference too. So I'm not sure they're going to have enough of a, they're not going to have enough of an, or saying that wrong, their resume may not be impressive enough compared to some of their other counterparts around the G5.
And that's why I didn't even bring up Central Michigan, because they're not going to be ranked at all if they rematch in the MAC title game. They're not going to be ranked at all. So he, like I said, he needs other dominoes to fall more than anything else in his conference. But what he would need from his conference is for Akron to remain, you know, to win all the rest of his games, and then somehow him and Akron can meet in the MAC title game. That way it'd be ranked on ranked by that point. But if it goes to a tiebreaker, you know, Chip has the tiebreaker, so... unfortunately, it probably would be, you know, a non-ranked Central Michigan, which isn't Chip's fault at all, but it's just how it is. They will not be ranked during conference title game time, so that's going to be tough to overcome from him. And like I said, he would just have to let the other dominoes fall, because like Sammy said, with Missouri State, they're in the clubhouse. They beat an SEC team on the road. That stamps the resume right there. You as a Conference USA team beat an SEC team on the road. That stamps the resume right there. And not Mississippi State. You didn't beat Mississippi State on the road. You beat Missouri on the road. So it's like, that stamps them already. So it's going to be tough for a lot of these teams to overcome, but especially like someone in the MAC or the Sun Belt, to overcome that.
Do we only get one team in the CFP from the G5?
More than likely, you will probably never see two G5s.
It's still only 12 teams, correct?
Yeah, it's still only 12 teams. We still going by real life rules, so it's just going to be one G5.
Gotcha. Yeah, you're right. Missouri State's got it. As long as they win out, they pretty much have it locked up for sure. Does Washington State and UConn count as G5 teams because they're independents?
They count as independents more than G5, so they kind of get that Notre Dame treatment, but they don't get the Notre Dame treatment, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I've always looked at it as Notre Dame is an independent of the P4, and then Washington State, Oregon State, and UConn are independent of
G5, yeah. That's basically how that goes, CG, is those three are the independent of the G5. Notre Dame is the independent of the Power Four.
It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I think the one thing that it just luck of the draw with the schedule, with Akron being so good, if Eastern Michigan had him scheduled and had an opportunity to play a ranked opponent and, you know, potentially get a win against him, that could have helped on the resume. But again, the only thing you really can control is your out of conference schedule. Kudos to him for winning out of conference, but just resume with those other teams, that alone, the OOC is just not going to be able to be comparable, unfortunately. We'll jump to one of the final two conferences. The darling G5 conference last season, the AAC. Very interesting because we had a lot of teams doing some serious work in that conference. Jumper ended up winning it. This year, we've got some interesting things going on. You've got Jokers, who was 2-0 in conference play. Slow start. I know he lost his opening game, but he bounced back winning the next two. You've got a longtime vet, Coach Bearass, Sooner fan. He's sitting at 4-1 with East Carolina, so definitely bouncing back from a rough season with New Mexico in season 32. And then DK, South Florida. He's 3-2, 1-0 in conference play. And then the other standout, Tulsa, ranked. He is 5-1. Mr. Ryan Collins playing really well. He's 2-1 in conference play. Vic, What are your thoughts on the AAC from what we've seen so far?
I like Ryan. I like Coach Ryan. I do. I've seen a few of his games. I like Coach Ryan. He has that Tulsa team going. Like I said, 5-1, undefeated in conference. I like how he plays. Someone to look out that may play spoiler is Shoddy Mack with Charlotte, and Coach Bearass and ECU, they have a tough team as well. But I feel like when it's all said and done and everybody plays their games and stuff like that, it's going to be Joker's conference. I feel like it may be Joker's and Coach Bearass in the conference title game. And like I said, I feel like it's Joker's conference to win, basically. I've said that since the beginning of the season. I'm not changing that focus at all.
How you see things shaping up, TG?
I'm looking at the schedules here. And Tulsa plays ECU in this block, or week 8, right? That's going to be huge. Memphis has got a bunch of games to fill out, but they got ECU later in the season. They got to play South Florida. And I really don't know the users too well in this conference, but I mean, since Tulsa's already ranked, I would say they probably have like a head start on everybody else. And if they can get past ECU, I think they may be able to take it and at least get to the title game. And then against Joker in Memphis, that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, this one is interesting. I am of the belief that we're going to get, it could be, I hate the tiebreakers because it could play a factor, but Memphis beating Tulsa is huge. He has one more big game. He plays East Carolina next block, but this block, he's got South Florida at home. Now, I know Duquesne had a loss, and let's be honest, he's played against Bucknut and LSU. That's a tough ask. But he's sitting at 3-2. His other loss was a road game against Oregon State, Doc, 28-38. For the most part, South Florida's offense has looked pretty good. So the question for me is, can he keep that offense rolling? He's going to have to put up points to beat Jokers, that's for sure. Because Jokers, I know he just had a kid. Congrats on that. And he's working on, you know, getting back into the swing of things gameplay-wise. If there's any time to catch him, now would probably be a good time. Though I think that both are great coaches for sure. I think that's the matchup that we're going to end up having, regardless of who wins the regular season matchup. I think that we'll end up getting a rematch between South Florida and Memphis in the conference championship. South Florida, the rest of the way, really the only big game that they have left will be against Memphis. So tiebreaker-wise, it would help to get that win, but it would be smooth sailing. And then Memphis, you know, he has East Carolina. It's on the road. Bearass is more of a defensive guy. And just the way this game is, I just feel like it lends itself to offense, and that's going to favor Memphis, especially later on in the season once he fully gets back in a rhythm. There is one other game that I wanted to point out, though. It opened this block, and I would like your thoughts. Now, the pat on the back. Last episode, Vic, you gave one to Drew Baca. Well-deserved. He's a good dude. Love chatting with him. And he's always entertaining in chat. This block, he takes on Navy. Both teams are winless at this point. Is this the game that Drew Baca gets the win?
Game of the week. Game of the week, in my opinion. Game of the week. And SMU just in real life just missed a field goal. That might have messed up my bet. I do feel like he gets the win this week over Navy. You heard it here first. Don't know if they're playing right now. Hopefully not. Hopefully he plays after he hears this. But you got this, Drew Baca. You got this. I am rooting for you. You're going to get that first win of the season. You're going to get off the snot. You're going to get it against Navy.
That's so tough because I like both coaches. I feel bad for Ice because I feel like the option offense is really difficult with that team more than it probably should be, especially last year's game, because I felt like their offense should have been good enough to run it, and it was a struggle for him the whole time, and I know it was driving him nuts, as we talked about it a bit. I'm torn here. I wish there was a way they could both win. They're both great dudes. But I think the option offense is probably going to be a trouble spot for Navy. And, man, Drew Baca, talk those quarterbacks up. I watched your last game. Man, he had guys open, and there were just so many errant passes where a dude was just overshooting, throwing it, you know, darts in the ground. Just one game. Like, this has to be your moment. Got to get these guys. Got to get those quarterbacks under control. Make it happen, dude. I'm rooting for you.
Definitely rooting for you, my man. Definitely rooting for you.
And then we have one conference left. the Sun Belt. So looking at the Sun Belt right now, the one is by default, they're, I'm gonna be honest with you, they're my favorite conference in the league solely for one reason. They have divisions. Thank you. So looking at the East right now, you have Brady with Appalachian State. He sits at 4-3 overall, struggled at a conference, but he is 3-0 in conference play. Behind him is Marshall, who's undefeated at 2-0. And then you've got Coastal Carolina and Georgia State. They've both had great seasons to this point so far. Georgia State's 5-2, dub. And I'm going to mispronounce the name, say Slovene. I'm definitely saying it wrong. That's why I can't be a teacher. Coastal Carolina is 4-1, but they don't have, he's just 1-1 in conference play, so just not a huge sample size just yet. We'll get to that. On the west side, Arkansas State, talked about him last week, man, or last episode, sorry. Rough out of conference, but he bounces back. He's 3-0 in conference play, and then no one else in that division has a winning record. So, CG, I'll start with you. First question, we'll just go question at a time here. Arkansas State is 3-0 in the West. Do you see any other team challenging them for that spot?
No, I think they got the West pretty much locked up right now. Just from what I've seen so far.
All right, Vic, how are you feeling about that?
Say the question again for me.
Arkansas State in the West, they're 3-0 in conference play. Do you see anyone else in their division challenging them for that top spot?
No.
All right. Well, simple enough. There is one guy that I can see, but he already does have a conference loss. But this is one of those instances where it's head-to-head. Because of the division, it could be a factor. He won it last. He won the West last season. I haven't given up on him. I'm a big dealer fan, but Ninja Nano. Got to get the defense under control, though, because he's had a couple of games where he's given up over 40 points. Dealer does like to put up points. So that would be a scary one. And that's not to the last block of the season, but he's going to have to run the table until he gets to that point. And he does have James Madison coming up. You've got Troy and King Salty. He can be a scary game. When he's playing at his best, I've seen him put up some points too. So he's got to get the defense under control. That would be the one guy I could see giving Dealer a run for his money, but he would have to run the table. I think Arkansas State, outside of that game, won't lose another conference game. Question two.
I don't think Dealer's losing the conference game. Until ...
Well, we'll get to that, because I'm assuming that'll be question three. Question two. In the East, who do you have as the front runner to win the division?
The obvious front runner right now is App State. But I feel like when it's all said and done, it would have to take two losses by App State. So I don't think it would happen, because App State won the head-to-head. But I would love for my guy Dub to get the East title for the Sun Belt.
Okay. CG, who you got in the East?
I think App State. I've played him twice in scrims, and I know he's a really good user, even with a team that's not that great. So I would lean on him for sure.
Okay. I am going to agree. For a couple of, or maybe one additional reason why. App State's an interesting one, because he does, that last block could be very telling. First of all, the rest of his schedule is very interesting. James Madison, I know Jason is, you know, likes to give a lot of coach speak. He will not be, if he wins that game, it will not be an easy one. Boss Ranger also is an interesting one because he tends to play a lot of close games in big games. So that also won't be an easy one. But it's that last block that's really going to be telling, because you plays Marshall. Marshall would have to remain undefeated, I believe, to getting to that point. And then he plays Arkansas State. So that's a really tough final block of the season, you know, within the conference. And the trap game. And it's the dangerous trap game. You look at the record, Georgia Southern, winless. But all of those losses have been by one score. So he has, conference-wise, a tough finish. But I do think that I don't think he's going to finish undefeated. But I still think that he will win the tiebreaker to win the division. So we both have the same teams. Who do you think wins the Sun Belt?
Since I'm a little different, we all kind of do have the same team because I think.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, you said. I'm sorry. Yeah,
Georgia State. Yeah, Georgia State. But if Georgia State gets it, I think Georgia State will come out with the win, but I feel like it's going to be App State and Arkansas State, and when that happens, it's going to be Arkansas State with the victory.
Okay, CG, who you got?
I've got App State winning it for sure. It's going to be App State and Arkansas State. I'll take App State over.
So before I give my answer, I have a question. If we get to a situation, I've never been in a situation before in the NDL. It's just never played out that way. Let's say, for the sake of argument, App State and Arkansas State both have that final spot, or have their bid locked up before block 7. I don't think that would be possible, but, you know, App State, well, it could be. But let's say App State beats Marshall week 13, and then the final game of the season is against Arkansas State. How do you play that game, knowing that you are going to play in a conference championship game? Again, like, you're going to have an immediate rematch. How would you go about playing that game?
It depends on how your team does at home versus away. It depends on that, in my opinion. It depends on, does your team play better at home? Do you have a better home field advantage than the other person? If you do, then I'll go balls to the wall and try to win that game. If you feel like you play better on the road, or you feel like you can get that person on the road, then I will play very vanilla.
Okay. I'll interject here before you, CG. This is interesting because I know we all have our favorite plays on offense that we like to run, or like that maybe we like to save. In this scenario, I'll be honest, I feel like I would be trying to maybe set up stuff or try out some other plays out of certain formations to kind of give a look for something else. So like, hey, we just played, you know, a couple days ago, we're playing again. Oh, when he came out in this formation, he did this. So trying to set up plays for the next game, like, I still would try to win because I just feel like it just gives you bad mojo if you go into a game looking not to win. Like, I'm not saying that I'm trying to lose, but I'm really not trying to win, you know? So I don't want to show too much, but at the same time, I want to make sure that I'm doing what I can to try to win the game in that moment, but also setting up stuff for our next meeting. How about you, CG?
I kind of agree with that. And I think that's a really smart strategy. Like, if you know, if you know you've got the spot locked up for the conference title game and you know it's versus that opponent, it makes a lot of sense to just kind of try some things out in looks that it kind of, you know, they run out of the same look as your favorite stuff, but you're not really running your favorite stuff kind of thing. But still try to actually win the game. So that, yeah, that's really smart, actually. That's probably how I would play it, too. You don't want to go all out and try to get the win, you know what I mean? If it's already set up for the next week, because you don't want to give away your secrets. So that makes a lot of sense.
It's interesting, because I see that happen sometimes with the cup. Like, hey, we play in the cup, and then we play in the regular season. Just not necessarily the mindset, but just like how the games kind of play out. So I know it's different for everybody. I was just curious on how you guys felt about that. So now with that said, we've covered all the conferences. We can talk big picture here to end this and wrap it up. As it stands right now, with three teams, assuming only one team gets a G5 spot, or I guess we'll call it the G5, because I know Washington State's probably gonna be part of this conversation. You know what I mean, though. Give me the three teams that you're looking at right now, their top three teams for that one spot as of today.
Top three teams for the G5 playoff spot?
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you go first, CG.
I actually set up a quick little spreadsheet while we were sitting here talking, because I knew this question was coming. I have Missouri State is the obvious number one, and then I have UConn as two, and then I think Nevada and Washington State would be the third, because I think. Because they play each other. Is that what we figured out earlier? Do they play each other?
I actually had it up. Let me reopen that tab. Did,
maybe? Or no, I think that was Boise with Nevada.
I know for sure Boise plays Nevada. They do not.
They don't play each other. Yeah, that's going to be the two that I would say would be the third. So like those three, like Missouri State, if they win out, I mean, they got to be in there, right? But UConn and then like Nevada and Washington State, it's gonna be between them. I think those four are gonna be the ones.
Yeah. Vic, do you wanna go or do you want me to go? I don't know if you need a little extra.
You can go ahead.
Okay. For now, I say that Missouri State, it's tough, because I know the ranking kind of made me think about it more, but I'm also looking at the future schedule. I think Missouri State, if I had to go today, I think that win against Missouri, I know the score may not say, but you have to take in the context of what happened in that game. He had complete control of that game. He was on the road to a blowout, and then you had to disconnect, and then you want to talk about flipping the table, complete 100, 0-100, and still able to hold on to win. I feel like some people probably crack in that situation, and he was able to, like, you know, the what the hell moment, and then able to lock in and say, okay, no, we got this. I'll figure it out. Washington State is number two for me, but I'm watching them very closely, because while they don't have a win against Missouri, he has some nice games on his schedule that could be big wins potentially if they continue to win. Wake Forest isn't ranked. I'm not really sure why they're not. I know they've been close, but that I look at as a ranked opponent. If he wins that game, Central Michigan, if he continues to win, does he sneak into the polls? That would be a ranked win. Hawaii, does he continue to win? Does he sneak into the polls? That could be a ranked win. And his losses to a P4 team by 1 point. I'm watching Missouri State closely because I feel like Washington State's resume, depending on how things play out at the end and how San Diego State finishes his season, that could look like a really strong win as well. So I want to say two, but I feel like they're a 1.5 in my book right now. And then for me, number three is kind of the tough one. Man, that's the one I'm struggling with because I'm bouncing three teams around right now. I'm just going to be honest. I don't think I can go with a third team. That's a cop-out. I don't feel confident enough that any of the teams that I'm looking at have fully separated themselves just yet.
Ooh.
Pending one. If UConn beats NC State on the road, then I think that pulls out of that group of teams I'm looking at, that pulls UConn to number three. Go ahead, Vic.
I just want, for the record, to know I did boo that. Boo. My three teams are Missouri State, of course. That's my guy. No Way Jose. Do the dance. If you don't know, look it up. Second, I would have Washington State right now. I would have Washington State second right now. If they can close out the rest of their season, win the rest of their games, big win Wake Forest, big win Central Michigan, then yes, I feel like they would be in contention for a playoff spot for sure. The third team I would look out for, and it's a tie between Memphis, if he wins out, definitely got to consider the American Conference when it comes to the G5 spot, because that is one of the premier G5 leagues. I would say that and probably the Mountain West or the premier G5 leagues in FBS. So you would definitely consider Memphis. Plus, his loss was out of conference. So if he runs the table throughout, goes undefeated, only has one loss, it would be hard not to consider him. And the other team would be Eastern Michigan. We already talked about them and talked about the road that they would have to travel. Eastern, like I said, this is the dominoes falling effect. If the other teams that I mentioned slip up throughout the way and they continue to rise up, then that playoff spot is all theirs.
Okay. Man, it's going to be a good finish. The next two blocks will be really telling to what happens in some of these conference races. Because, I mean, we're just opening block five today. Most teams have already had their bye week. So you're looking at, you know, 5 to 6 conference games left. There's a lot that's still going to happen. I'm definitely curious to see how things play out. Before you give your ball knower fact, Vic, any closing thoughts by either of you gentlemen?
Any closing thoughts, CG? My closing thought would be the ball knower fact.
No specific closing thoughts. Just want to say thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it. And I enjoy listening to you guys all the time. So it was kind of fun jumping on and just chatting with you for a little bit.
Matter of fact, I do have a closing thought. I do. Sunbelt, play your games. Play your game, Sunbelt. Sunbelt Conference, play your game. That's my closing thought. You, Sammy?
Well, always play the game. It's funny because I was actually gonna, my closing thought was gonna be thanking CG for coming on for, he beat me to it. So say thanks for coming on, and thanks for chatting pre pod as well. Always a fun chat. Oh man, we love this
Don't
game
leave
so
yet, though, CG.
much.
Don't leave yet, though, CG. I want you to be aware of the Ball Nor fact of the week. I gave one yesterday. Yesterday, if you didn't hear, it was about the pettiness and the BS that Georgia Tech had to go through to even get a split national championship with that other team that will not be mentioned because someone's a Nebraska fan in here. And I will respect that, and I will respect that. But today's Ball Nor fact is, now I know this doesn't happen anymore because we have overtime. And we have the convoluted overtime that we have. But do you know that a modern era, so I'm going to say from 1985 on, a modern era team, how many ties do you think is the record for the most ties in a season?
In a season,
In a season.
more than
The
one.
most ties in a season. Without looking it up, CG, don't look it up. Don't look it up. Can you guess the number of ties, the most amount of ties in a season?
I'm gonna guess three. And I don't even feel confident. Like, even just saying three is
I have no
wild.
idea. I'll guess
No,
three or
you're not.
four. I'll guess four.
Oh, look at CG come through in the clutch. It is four. It is four. Four ties. Now, two teams did it in, I think, the 30s, I want to say. Yeah, in the 30s. One did it in 1937, 1939. Those aren't the teams that we're going to focus on. We're not focusing on them because that's pre-84, 85. But the one team I am going to do, and this person is going to love this ball fact, by the way. This person is going to love it. Central Michigan had four ties in 1991.
In 1991? Hold on a
In
second.
1991.
So I have to ask, and this is going to probably make me sound bad, but you guys like listening have to understand. I'm late to college football. Like I'll admit, I'm 39 years old, so I'm not like young young. Like I'm not like an El Jefe or MJ Kemp. I'm not in that range of guys, but I got into college football later because at the time I was living in Germany. And like my dad mostly talked about the NFL, but in order for me to watch NFL games, I had to stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning. So that wasn't happening. Like, dad's not letting me stay up on a school night to, watch an NFL game. When did they change the overtime rules to what we have, like where it's like someone has to win? When did that change? That's crazy to me.
The NCAA adopted the overtime rule in 1996.
Man, I'm just blown away because I just like watching an NFL tie is hilarious to me because it just seems like you played all this time just to not win or lose. Like it's like almost like you played for nothing in the grand scheme of things. Like it doesn't count as a loss. Clearly you don't
So
win
just
either. That's wild.
imagine that, but no overtime. Like imagine that, but no overtime. So if you always knew, so if you wanted, this was before all of our times, I believe, when Tom Osborne went forward for Nebraska back in the day against Miami in the Orange Bowl, it makes so much sense now because the game would have ended in a tie.
Yeah, it does.
It wouldn't have went to no overtime, no anything. It just would have ended in a tie after four quarters.
Man.
They adopted that rule in 1996. They started that rule. I believe USC, UCLA was like the first Power Four overtime game ever.
Gotcha. That makes sense now, because that's
another ball no effect, by the way, but yeah.
I wanted to bring that up in the last episode because Georgia Tech had a tie. And when you said that, I was like, but it, like, I was more focused on, wait, why aren't they playing in the Orange Bowl? But I did have that thought, like, wait, a tie? Like, did they just have, like, in my head at the time, I'm thinking, well, maybe they just had a sudden death overtime and no one scored. So that was it. Like, thinking it was like the NFL. That's, man, to have four ties in a season would, as a player, that would be almost comical, man.
Georgia Tech had a tie, and the other team that we not mentioned had the fifth down rule game.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, trust me.
But the ties were all conference games. They tied Eastern Michigan 14-14. They tied Ohio to begin the season. They started the season with a tie. They tied Ohio 17-17. Overall, they only had one loss on the year. That one loss was to Bowling Green. So they only had one loss on the year. They tied Toledo. So two of those ties were on the road. They beat Michigan State, by the way, at Michigan State, which is wild. They tied Miami of Ohio. That was at home. And they also tied Eastern Michigan. Their only loss of the season was to Bowling Green. They went 6-1-4.
That sounds like a hockey record. Okay, I got a question for you. This is off of this. So I think I told you I'm a really big hockey fan. And they changed the rules. So it used to be, I want to say, when I started watching hockey, because you have the 3 20-minute periods, and then you had a 5-minute overtime. And then if no one scored, it was just a tie. So you get 2 points for a win. For people that are listening that don't watch hockey, if you win, you get 2 points. Just a game in general. If it goes to overtime, both teams get a point. And if you win it in overtime, you get 2 points. But then they changed it to where you have a shootout if it's a tie still at the end of overtime. And then it's 3-on-3 hockey instead of 5-on-5. I want to say back when it was just overtime was 4-on-4, but I don't fully remember. But then you'd have a shootout. So someone has to win. Does that matter to you? I don't know how everyone feels about that. Like, if you're in a situation, like, if
I want,
does
I want
someone to have to win?
I want to ask a question. What a question! I like to answer the question. I like that actually. But to ask the question right back, why they don't do that in the playoffs?
That's like, a good question.
It's different. It's a different format in the playoffs entirely. You play a whole 20-minute period of overtime in the playoffs, right?
And so it's this like literal sudden death until someone scores.
Yeah, I feel like they should change the rule on that. Well, maybe not, because it's not prevalent as much as it used to be back in the day. But I wonder why they don't do that in the playoffs.
I can tell I've watched some like double and triple overtime playoff games that were just like, man, all it takes is one goal and everyone's on the edge of their seat. And I know the guys are getting tired and they don't change the schedule. So, and I've seen triple overtime where they scored and it's like, all right, well, man, we lost. Heartbreaker. We got to get ready because we know when the next game is. They're not moving it back. So you have to muster it up and just kind of get off those emotions and get into the next game. It's like playoff hockey is super intense with that.
I like hockey's rule. Of course I like the standard basketball. I don't know about the football one. I don't know about the conversing 2-point plays like we saw last year, and it becomes the ultimate chess match that had us going completely insane in the live chat when it came to Georgia Tech, Georgia last season.
And then the one with Georgia, Kentucky in the NDL.
Yeah, yeah. Then one in the NDL too. Yeah, it was completely insane. I don't know about that one. I don't know. I know why they did it, but I don't know if that really just works. I like the old way, you just put it on the 25 and have at it for as many overtimes as possible.
Yeah.
But, because after a while, like, I feel like, and this is me in the NDL, I'm not going further than 2 overtimes. I'm not doing that shit. No, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. I don't even care if it is 2-point plays or not. I'm not doing that. No, it's either I'm going to win it here or I'm going to lose it here. Simple as that.
I'll learn my lesson with that one day. 2 overtime games.
Like, I'm not. Usually, if I, depending on how I score in the first overtime, if I have the ball last, by the way, this is if I have the ball last. I'm not going for 2 if I got the ball first. I'll let it play out if I got the ball first. But if I have the ball last, even in the first overtime, depending on how I score, I'm going for 2.
I can't argue that.
If I have an easy score, I'm going for 2. If I had to drag out those 25 yards, I'm not. And I probably go for it in the second overtime. But I'm not letting it really get past 2 overtimes.
I've always thought, for me, with overtime in college, the one thing I always found kind of weird was that the stats still counted. I know that sounds kind of weird to say, like, well, it's still part of the game, but it just felt weird that you can go 7 overtimes and it's like your defense just gave up all these touchdowns, but it's all overtime.
I'd rather have that than to have a tie, because, like, and for younger NDLers or anybody in the NDL, you can pretty much, if we talk about an old season or old game of a team or your favorite team, you can easily go on YouTube, type in the game, type in the year, it'll pop up. Full game will pop up. It's really easy to access college football archives on YouTube. Real easy. Like I said, just pop in a team versus team in said year, it'll pop up. And I've watched a game that just ended in a tie, and it was just like, oh, it's over? Oh, damn. Oh, I guess it's over. I'd rather have the overtime than that.
Yeah.
Because that looked so weird when I saw that. It was some game, I forgot, but it was some game that was like a tie. It was like in the think in the early 90s or 80s or something like that. And I went back and watched it, and it just ended. And then everybody just walked off the field, and I was just like, that's it? That's weird. And so I would rather have the overtime. But yeah, the NCAA did not have, I think it was in FCS in like 94, 95, but it didn't get into FBS until 1996.
Interesting.
So pre-1996, there were ties. That was a Michigan team that won the Rose Bowl off like two ties. I think they were in or won the Rose Bowl over Washington with like two ties. They was like 8-1-2 or something like that.
Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. I don't want to lose. So I guess in that perspective, a tie is better. But I just, the fan in me wants an outcome. Like, I need someone to win. I need someone to lose. But I understand a tie is better than a loss. Speaking of losing, one final thing to add, a game that went final a little while ago while we were talking about the Fun Belt. Boss Ranger, told you, man, this kid gets some wins. On the road, beats Marshall 56-21.
Wow. Wow.
So now Marshall absolutely would have to win out in order to earn a tiebreaker potentially against Appalachian State. That's a big one. And Boss Rangers,
that is a big one.
He's sneaky good. He had Ole Miss one season, but he, tell you, this kid has, he's got solid user skills, and he just, when he's in the G5, he just lurks down there. He's always a dangerous out.
In my recent memory, outside of Shale and Jiggy, he played Bucknuck the closest. Now, my memory may be a little foggy, and it could have been another user as well, but I do remember that game him and Bucknuck had when he was Ole Miss.
Yeah, that was the Ole Miss curse, and he gave him a run for his money.
He did. He did.
All right, well, that's a nice last little update to end it. We'll call it there. And we'll be back next week, and we'll see how some of these conferences start to flesh out as games get played.
We'll see you guys next week.